Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals, the 2 o'clock docket. You are the only case set for oral argument at 2 o'clock. We have another one set at 3, and those are the only two cases set for oral submission. Our other cases are submitted on the briefs. Your panel this afternoon is, to my right, Justice Bob McCoy. To my left, Justice Bill Meyer. I'm Leanne Dofino. Understand both sides are ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, if you'll call the case, we'll get started.
The court will now call Emmett Rogers versus Robert Orr et al. And may it please the court, Mr. Michael Minton to argue for the appellant, and Mr. Jeff Coates to argue for the appellate.
And Michael.
May it please the court. This is the second time I've argued an appeal with an iPad, but it went pretty well last time. So here's hoping. The first and foremost issue, obviously, that I need to address is the issue of the court subject matter jurisdiction under Section 54.015A5 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code. Let me try to streamline this and clear some of the underbrush away by saying what we are not claiming. We do not claim, and we have never claimed, that Emmett Rogers is an employee of the state of Texas. We are claiming that for purposes of the state-mandated task that he was carrying out when he was conducting, I don't know what you call it, I guess the best thing would be to call it an accessibility survey or certification, that he was carrying out a mandatory function of the state. When he went to bed that night, he wasn't a state officer. When he got up and ate breakfast the next morning, he wasn't a state officer. But when he was at the Walmart, when he was measuring, when he was inspecting, when he was checking to make sure that there was compliance with the Texas accessibility standards, he was a state officer. I know that the court, as appellate attorneys, we all do a lot of research. If you ever think you've seen everything doing legal research, try researching officer of the state on Westlaw. Because you're going to come up with about a million criminal cases, but you also come up with a few civil cases, and it's surprising how few civil cases I was able to find, and I'm willing to admit that may be my fault, how many cases or how few cases there actually are that discuss the issue. The cases that I found, a lawyer I tried a case with once years ago would have called it calfskin law, when you have to go back to a book that's so old it's bound in calfskin, you know. You might be in trouble. But if you
did
go back.
Did the calf skins come after the horn books?
I think so, but I think both of those were probably just ahead of cave paintings. But
right.
But if you go back, the nearest that I can glean from looking at the older cases on this issue is that an officer of the state means a person who is carrying out a sovereign function, a function of the government, under more or less, I guess, independent, I guess that's the difference between a state officer and a state employee. Obviously, the legislature saw fit to use both terms. They must have had a reason for doing that. Now, there is case law. As I was preparing my notes this morning before this argument, I came across a case called Betts versus Johnson, 73 Southwest 4, which talks about the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court to issue writs of mandamus to officers of the state under the old revised civil statute. I think it was 1733. What the court said in that case, and the Supreme Court reaffirmed this in a later case in N. Ray TXU, 67 Southwest 3rd, 130, when they talk about the power to mandamus an officer of the state, they're only talking about department heads. But what the court clearly said, yeah, department heads are officers of the state, but there are also other classes that are officers of the state. I would say, for instance, in looking at an example, maybe some type of a commissioner or somebody that's given maybe when Nolan Ryan was commissioned by the governor to go talk to the snow monkey people down in Austin, maybe he was an officer of the state, I don't know. But what I am suggesting is this, is that whether you call them state actors or state officers, There's certainly the parallel certainly exists under civil rights law under 1983 for a state actor who is a private individual, as shown in the Filarski case that was cited in our reply brief. In anticipation of several of the arguments that I know are going to be raised by Mr. Cobes, Emmett was working for Walmart. That's like saying that when you get your car inspected, you hired Quaker State instead of Jiffy Lube. They do the same inspection. They have to certify the same compliance with regulations. But the fact of the matter is they're still carrying out a state-mandated function by making sure a car is roadworthy and that it complies with emission standards. And I don't mean to trivialize this by bringing up the car inspection places, but I mean, it's the best example and it's the most readily cognizable example that I could think of. The other thing is, well, Emmett gets paid by Walmart to do his job. Well, unless you're a lawyer in a law firm with a lot of notary publics, you know, if you have to go down to a car lot or a bank to get something, and I can guarantee you if you go to a bank, you're going to have to pay a notary fee. That doesn't make a notary public any less of a state official or any, you know, I think an officer of the state who's commissioned by the Secretary of State. I think that this distinction is important because we now live in anybody that just drives down through the I-30 corridor in Weatherford and sees all the construction going on there or sees all the construction going on in Frisco or some of the other major developing urban areas can look at it and see if we were to rely on state inspectors alone, and I mean people who are full-time employees of the Department of Licensing and Regulation, we'd never get anything done. This court has recognized that private individuals are entitled to official immunity. And I think the unspoken reason for that is because they are, in some form or fashion, officers of the state. If this were a federal civil rights case, I would write that as a state actor, somebody acting on behalf of the state. I know that this court took issue with the decision in Titus Medical Center versus Tretta, or Tretta versus Titus Medical Center, whichever way the name went. I know that the court took issue with the Texas Court of Appeals determination that the president or the chief executive officer of a hospital who is an employee of a private corporation apparently was an officer of the state for purposes of their analysis. I know that the court was somewhat critical because they did not undertake any jurisdictional analysis. I know as a former briefing attorney on this court that that jurisdictional analysis goes on with everything that hits that door in the clerk's office. The Centex versus Johnson case, which I believe the appellees will rely on very strongly, I agree with the court's holding. If I were on that side of the bench, I would have written a concurring opinion saying you're right, but not for the reason you stated. In the Centex case, it is distinguishable because Centex in that case said, well, we're not an officer of the state, we're an employee of the state. Well, you're also a corporation, and the statute does say individuals. So for that reason, I think that Centex really isn't applicable. If the court disagrees with me on the jurisdictional issue, which is fine, between this case and Tretta, I mean, I've got my split, should we decide to take it further up. But I think that the circumstances in this case warrant a finding that the court find that it does have jurisdiction to hear this interlocutory appeal. Turning to the merits of the case, the summary judgment evidence in this case presented by Mr. Orr is really rather confusing. In the context of official immunity, simple negligence is insufficient to raise a fact issue as to good faith. I don't think there's any dispute that Emmett Rogers was acting in the scope of his authority. I don't think there's any dispute that his duty was discretionary. He could pass them or fail them. With regard to the issue of good faith, simply saying, well, he didn't, you know, he did a sloppy job. Well, okay, but if I read the law of official immunity correctly, and if I say qualified immunity instead of official immunity, I apologize, it just starts to run together. But if I'm reading that law correctly with regard to official immunity, the standard is not whether Emmett Rogers or whether a reasonable and whether he wasn't reasonable and prudent. The issue is no one would have done it that way. And it's just simply not there in the summary judgment evidence. Now, they don't even discuss the evidentiary standard in their response. They're just saying he's not entitled to qualified immunity because he's not an officer of the state. Well, that's fine. Whether the court treats that as a concession or not is strictly up to you. But I would simply say, you know, under the law of official immunity, he has the right to be wrong. But he still is entitled to immunity because of the same concerns that would vest if a state employee went out and carried out the same inspection. There's no question he would be entitled to official immunity. So the same policy reasons for extending official immunity exist as to private individuals. And regardless of the language of the statute, I just don't see why it makes any sense to allow somebody to have the right to an interlocutory appeal because they actually draw a check full-time from the state, as opposed to somebody who's out there basically doing the state's job. Obviously, this court understands that official immunity can be extended to private individuals. That was the Guerrero case that was decided by Justice Brigham wrote the opinion. And since then, the question has basically been, is there some kind of a relationship between the private individual and the government agency or the state that allows them to partake of official immunity? We don't have a contract. Emmett Rogers has never had a contract with the state of Texas to carry out these duties. What he's got is essentially a license. You can call it a commission, I don't know. But he doesn't have a contract. He has a license, and if you look at the administrative regulations, they specifically say that Emmett Rogers is carrying out a function of a state agency, of the TDLR.
Mr. Manton, I'm having a little bit of a – help me understand the difference in there being a state standard set by statute. Which then, as a state standard, is a guideline for a person to perform a duty that they may be entitled to perform as a consequence of having a license from the state.
Okay.
What's the difference?
Let me, Judge, I don't, can I ask you to repeat that?
Okay. Mr. Rogers is a registered accessibility specialist.
Yes,
licensed,
sir.
By the Texas Department of Licensing.
Correct.
That's his license, official recognition by the state of Texas, to perform duties that might be set out as a standard in the Texas Architectural Barriers Act. And he is, by virtue of his license, entitled to make a determination as to the compliance with the state standard. By fact that he's entitled to make that kind of evaluation, is it your contention that that is what makes him an officer of the court, I mean officer of the state?
Yes, and let me tell you why. Because unless he signs that piece of paper certifying compliance with those standards, after carrying out an inspection on behalf of the TDLR, executing the function of the agency, without that piece of paper, Walmart could never open their doors. No new construction could open their doors without, no new commercial construction could open their doors without that certification saying that there was compliance with the Texas accessibility standards.
And I understand what you're saying is the standard is set by the state, you must meet these standards. But in order to show that you've met the standards, you can go out and have someone who is a registered accessibility specialist who holds a state license from the Department of Licensing to come and look at your place and see that it is in compliance with architectural standards or it's not in compliance with architectural standards. And the mere fact that that person is out there applying the state standards is sufficient to make him an officer of the state while he's there.
I think that's correct, Judge. And the reason I believe that's correct is because he's out there for one thing and one thing only, and that's to make sure that the levels and the angles are correct. When he comes in and say, gee, that's a horrible shade of green, that has nothing to do with the standards. That has nothing to do with his state duties. But he is there acting on behalf of the state. The statute says it's got to be done by an employee of the agency, another agency with whom TDLR contracts, or a registered accessibility specialist. Well, guess what? There's a lot more registered accessibility specialists. I see my time is up.
Go ahead and answer.
Just finish. There's a lot more registered accessibility specialists than there are. I don't even know of an instance of a contracted agency to do this, and I think it'd be pretty tough to get somebody from TDLR to come up to Weatherford. So, but that's the basis.
Is there, final question, I'm going to ask you that, then I'll defer to other judges, but is there a group of officers of the state who are charged with the responsibility of rendering inspections on prospective buildings that to which the Texas Architectural Barriers Act applies? Are there any state officers who do those kind of inspections? Other than, I know your contention here, I'm saying is somebody working for the state who says that person is an officer who goes out and makes the inspections that the Texas Architectural Barriers Act gives?
In all candor, Your Honor, the statute provides for such persons, whether they exist, whether they're funded, whether they're earning a salary, I don't know. But I do know that the possibility or the potential exists under the statute. But to answer your question, I don't know of any, and I've never heard of any.
Thank you, sir.
You have a question? I do.
Yes, Your Honor.
If Walmart didn't like the way he was doing his job, could Walmart fire him?
That's a really good question. I think the answer is no. I don't think that they can run out and get somebody else if they're displeased with the result, because you have to remember that under the statute, his determinations are his.
No, suppose they don't think he works in a timely manner. Suppose they smell alcohol on his breath while he's doing the job. Can Walmart fire him if they don't like the result, the way he does his job?
I would say that if they did not like the way that he was doing his job, they could select somebody else. Just like if you pull up to Jiffy Lube and you don't like the look of the guy that's going to do your state inspection and you drive down the street to Quaker State. But I don't think that vitiates the entitlement to official immunity.
And for a child to get into school, a doctor is required to sign off assuring that the child has the immunizations and has been examined, and that doctor is licensed by the state, and that child isn't getting into school without the paperwork being signed off on by the doctor, is the doctor then a state, what's the word?
Officer of the state.
Officer of the state. So that you can't sue the doctor?
Well, assuming he can't hide behind the Health Care Liability Act with the expert report requirement, yeah, I think that there is a colorable argument that he could be. Take the example that I used. I started out thinking it was kind of a silly example, but take a car inspection place in a quick lube center. It's kind of a silly example, but the more you think about it, the more it makes sense. If they failed to carry out a state inspection, didn't find something that later caused an accident, would they be entitled to immunity? The more I thought about it, the more I thought, yeah, because it's the same set of standards. They're issuing a piece of paper that the government recognizes as being a certification of, want of a better term, roadworthiness. So I think the answer is, I think the answer is yes. But that's, you know, that's obviously, that's not the issue before us, but, and I think the answer to that question is every bit as policy driven as my position in this case. But in short terms, I think the answer for that limited scope, yes.
And so a compliance officer in a brokerage house who is licensed by the state and sometimes federally, whose only job is to see that the brokerage house is in compliance with laws, just like this fellow. He also can't be sued? He also is?
I would say that if he's an employee of the brokerage house, there may be some kind of a conflict of interest that prevents that from coming about. I don't know, because I'm no expert in employment law. But what I would say is, as long as he is carrying out a task that is charged to him, that only he or persons of his licensure can carry out, and it's required by the state, and if he didn't do it, they'd have to get the state to do it, then yes, I do believe that they're an officer of the state.
I'd like to know if there's any authority for your proposition about the car inspector.
No.
Okay.
And that's why I hesitated to use the example, because I thought I would get get hammered with it. But no, there is not.
All right, thank
that
you.
I'm aware of.
Yeah.
May it please the court, I'm going to work backwards a little bit through the question so that I can stay on track. Justice Dofino, I think your question, if you don't like the opinion, can you fire him and hire somebody else? I think the evidence in this case in connection with the summary judgment was Walmart did contract with him. Walmart paid him. The state didn't pay him anything. And so it would be my answer that Walmart would be free to fire him and hire somebody else. He was not like the building inspector that's employed by the city, for example, that the city chooses, the city sends out and red tags you or clears you. He was working at Walmart's pleasure. They could have refused to pay him. They could have told him to leave their premises. So he was not assigned by the state to perform the inspection. Obviously, the public policy issues with whether we characterize as state officers, everyone who holds a state license, whose job it is, at least in part, to carry out state directives, could encompass a huge block of people. I don't think this court has to reach that public policy issue, because I believe that this court doesn't have jurisdiction to consider the interlocutory appeal under the statute, which limits it to officers and employees of the state. Counsel asked, you know, why the distinction? And I think the distinction's an important legislative issue, that only officers and employees of the state are entitled to an accelerated interlocutory appeal to determine whether they have a right to be sued or not. There may be other members of the public and private individuals who are fulfilling state functions who may have some limited form of immunity, but the statute, and to the extent that class exists, I think it's a very small class, but the legislature did not see fit to give those people who may have some form of immunity a right to an interlocutory appeal. So we feel that this case falls squarely under the Syntex case, that the first issue we decide is he an officer or an employee of the estate? Just that simple. Not were his functions indicative of somebody who's performing a state function or something like that. There's no case that holds that a person who holds a license by the state to engage in conduct is an officer of the state. Back to Mr. Justice Meyer's question, and that is, who can perform these inspections? Are there other people? And we cite the statute in our brief. It's 469.052A and B. There are two other classes. They are employees of the department, and so presumably the department has such employees, at least the statute gives them the right to. And then there are entities which the commission contracts with under 055. And it's undisputed that the defendant in this case and his company were not contracted for by the commission. So they are independent contractors. They're not employees under the Texas Tort Claims Act definition of state employees. And there's nothing that has been cited to this court that would hold that they are officers. So we believe that this court lacks jurisdiction over this interlocutory appeal. If the court decides that it does have jurisdiction, then we don't believe that sovereign immunity or that any type of official immunity attaches in this case. We have, and Mr. Minton made an interesting comment when he opened up. He said his client was not an officer of the state when he woke up and had breakfast. He wasn't an officer of the state when he went to bed, but for some limited period of time when he was out there performing the state-mandated inspection, he was an officer of the court. Well, the summary judgment evidence that the plaintiffs presented to the trial court showed that he, in fact, did much more than that. And the allegations of negligence against him, both by the plaintiff and by Walmart, far exceed his role in determining whether there was compliance with the state. For example, he did not just perform a state compliance audit and send that into the state. He also inspected the premises for safety defects and supplied written reports to Walmart in connection with those safety reports. So even if you were to determine that he was a state officer when he was filling out the state required paperwork, there's lots of conduct that occurred in his inspections and the preparation of his reports that far exceeds that. So he would have his state officer hat on, if that's the title you want to give him, when he's doing the state work, but in doing the other inspection work for Walmart, for which he was paid by Walmart, he certainly didn't have a state officer hat on then, to the extent he ever was a state officer. So the conduct is more than just filling out this state paperwork. It's more like a car dealership that performs repairs on the car and also inspects it, rather than just a Jiffy Lube that just inspects the car. So the issue for the trial court may very well be, to the extent any any official immunity exists for one portion of the work that he did at the site, where does that official immunity end, and when is he responsible then for the other conduct that he performed out there, if that makes sense. We think that the evidence, though, clearly shows he's not an officer, he's not an employee, he doesn't have immunity conferred by 469. We cited Health and Occupations Code section in connection with physicians that are not employees of the state, but who by statute enjoy immunity because they're contracted with certain state hospitals. The legislature very clearly gave those people immunity. There's absolutely nothing in section 469, that gives a similar type of immunity to either the access specialist, like in this case, or any of the other classes of licensees who hold licenses under the government code in that section. So we believe that this court should dismiss the appeal for lack of jurisdiction, but in the event that it determines it has jurisdiction, then it should affirm the judgment of the trial court and remand the case for trial.
Your lead dog argument is whether or not he was acting in a state mandated capacity while he was performing some of these exceptions should wait for another day, because the statute itself uses the word state officer or state official, and had the statute, had the legislature meant to include someone fulfilling an obligation to do a state mandated inspection, it would have included that language. And the fact that it didn't lends itself to an interpretation that it's strictly state officials or state officers, and his own admission precludes that from happening. Is that's in essence your argument, your lead dog argument?
That is, Your Honor, the lead dog argument.
Right.
And we get that argument directly from the quotation from Syntex, in which this court said, Syntex confuses its potential entitlement to official immunity after a final adjudication, with its entitlement to immediate appellate review of an interlocutory order denying a motion for summary judgment. And the court goes on to say that officers and employees of the state have that interlocutory right simply because they are that, officers and employees of the state, people on the payroll, people who we don't want to drag into court and we want to let out as soon as possible. Private individuals don't enjoy that same right. They may ultimately obtain the immunity, but they do not enjoy the right to press accelerated interlocutory appeals to the courts of appeals for this state, whose jurisdiction are defined by statute. Counsel argues in the reply brief that this should be like the federal system, where qualified immunity cases are subject to interlocutory appeal to the, in the federal system. But that's not the system that we have, and that's not the jurisdiction that the courts of appeals were granted by statute to hear interlocutory appeals about. Thank you.
Post.
Yes, sir.
Before you leave. Counsel in his reply brief talks about the failure on the part of the appellee to mention another case from this court, that is Guerrero versus Tarrant County Mortician Services Company. And I noticed looking at that police brief that you didn't cite that case, and then I pulled the case and read it, and it looks to me as though your argument that because there was no contract with the state agency, that the Guerrero case turns on a different set of facts and is not applicable.
It does, and the Guerrero case addresses the issue of immunity for persons engaged in basically business for the state. And I don't believe that's applicable here. I did point out in the appellee's brief that he was not an employee, that he drew no salary from the Department of Licensing. And in fact, the administrative code clearly sets forth that he can't even hold himself out as an employee of this state. So we don't believe, well, although we don't think Guerrero is improperly decided, we don't believe it's determinative on this case.
Because of the fact there was a contract between Tarrant County and the Mortician Services Company to actually perform a part of the responsibilities of Tarrant County officials.
Correct. And that's probably where the public policy in this area is going. When states hire people whom they direct and control contractually to engage in state activities, especially state activities like police activities, like supervising prisons or building roads, state things that are typically the province of the state, that the state has a right to direct, when the state hires somebody to fulfill the state's obligations, then that's where I think you're seeing more of the public policy arguments coming in and protecting those type of people who are essentially fulfilling a state function.
All right, thank you.
Anything else? Jeff, is there anything else you want to say?
No, Your Honor, just that we believe that the appeal should be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction or otherwise the judgment of the trial court or the denial of the motion for summary judgment of the trial court should be affirmed.
Just a brief reply. First of all, with regard to the argument that summary judgment record shows that Emmett was out there giving safety recommendations to Walmart, I looked at the summary judgment record this morning in preparing for my oral argument, and I'll certainly leave it to the court's review, but I do not remember that being in the summary judgment record. He was there for one reason and one reason only, and that was to ensure compliance with the Texas accessibility standards. With regard to the Centex case, and I told you this was coming in my initial argument, Centex never would have been entitled to direct official immunity anyway because it's a corporation. Official immunity adheres to state officers or employees officers or employees of political subdivisions of the state, but it has no application to a corporation. The corporation might not be vicariously liable because its individual employees are entitled to immunity. And essentially, that's what we're going to be arguing. If we're successful here, that's what we're going to be arguing in the court to get Lubbock Inspection Service out of the suit. But Centex, they never would have been entitled to immunity themselves anyway. And keep in mind, we're not saying in any way, shape, or form we were an employee of the state. And I realize that there is not a lot of authority on this issue. And that's why I've had to look to policy issues because, you know, if you're a contractor and you promise Walmart that they're going to get to open their doors on June 1st and you got to wait on somebody from Austin to come up and tell you it's okay to open the doors, good luck keeping that schedule. I think that Emmett Rogers is entitled to the protection of official immunity. I think for this extremely limited role, I think he is an officer of the state. If there's a statute out there, a constitutional provision that gives an all-inclusive and defining definition of what a state officer is, I'd love to see it because, you know, in 6 months of research, both at the trial court and before this court, I haven't been able to find one. The only distinction I can find is state officers who can be officers of the state who can be mandamus and officers of the state who can't. I wish I could give you some more help on the point. I simply can't. I've been unable to find that law.
Help me out here. If a registered professional engineer or an architect stamps a set of drawings as required by the state, that it drawing certified with state promulgated building codes, if we go down this road, then why would not every architect and every engineer be able to claim official immunity by the use of his stamp fulfilling a state mandated function of approving building drawings, which requirements are also promulgated through state mandated building codes?
That's a very good question. I think that the answer to the question is that what an engineer's stamp, you know, when they certify a set of plans, is that what they mean? Or does it mean it says, hey, this thing won't blow over in the next, you know, Hood County hailstorm? If the purpose of the stamp is to ensure says that, yeah, we comply with state standards, I think that there may be an issue there. Perhaps it's a battle for another day. I don't know. But the more I read about this, you know, the more, like I said, I wasn't real keen on the Jiffy Lube argument either, but I kind of came around to it. So I think that there is certainly an issue with regard to that. But again, you know, they also made an argument in their brief about, well, TDLR also licenses barbers and cosmeticians. Yeah, but I think there's a difference between certifying somebody and saying they are capable of going out and doing the job that the state would do, and ensuring a minimum level of safety and compliance for purposes of implementing the state's police powers. That's where your barbers, your auctioneers, your cosmetologists, your plumbers, that's where they fall into line. I think it's completely different and distinct from basically a privatized army of state inspectors. So we ask that the court find that it does have jurisdiction over this case. We ask that the court reverse and render the judgment that the trial court should have, that they take nothing by their claims against Emmett Rogers. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. We appreciate your argument today, and we appreciate your briefs. As you can tell, we had a lot of questions. Your case is submitted, and you are now free to go about your business, or you can hang around until 3 o'clock if you want to watch another case being argued. You're perfectly welcome to hang around. But we're going to be in recess until 3 o'clock.